A couple of years ago, my wife and daughter and I traveled to Italy to see the sights. While in Rome, we spent a day at the Vatican. We toured the Sistine Chapel. We looked up at the ceiling, and it was nice. Now, it may not be the greatest work of art in the world, but it's certainly up there. Next, we walked over to St. Peter's Basilica, and I never comprehended just how massive that place is. I honestly believe we could fit our entire church building just inside the central room of the basilica. And standing there in the middle of St. Peter's, one would assume that that is the largest church in the world. But it's not. According to the folk at the Guinness Book of World Records, the distinction of being the world's largest church belongs to a church that is actually a modern replica of St. Peter's. It's just a tad bigger. And that church is known as the Basilica of Our Lady of Peace. Now, does anybody here happen to know where this particular church is located? Anybody? Going once, going twice? Western Africa, in the country of the Ivory Coast. The Ivory Coast sits on the Atlantic Ocean, bordered by Liberia and Ghana. Now, construction of this church, the Basilica of Our Lady of Peace, was completed just 30 years ago in 1990. And it was built by the president of the Ivory Coast, a man named Félix Houphouët-Boigny. Houphouët was the first president of this country following its independence in 1960, and he served as president until his death in 1993, 33 years. Now, he might be regarded as a good president, or some call him a benevolent dictator. But he was a leader in African politics, and some refer to him as the Sage of Africa. In 1983, Houphouët moved the capital of the Ivory Coast from the bustling port city of Abidjan to his home village of Yamoussoukro. And it is there in Yamoussoukro that he built this church. Now, the cost of the project is not known. It's estimated to have run between $200 and $600 million, an amount that's been criticized given the poverty of the country. The president, he claims to have paid for it himself out of his own fortune, but of course, no one knows. The church, nonetheless, is spectacular. It is graced with Italian marble, and it has massive stained glass windows with glass imported from France. In the center, it features a 110-pound gold cross, which is suspended from the glass chandelier made of Venetian glass. Just how large is this church? Well, it's got a square footage of 323,000 square feet. And the dome of the basilica reaches up 518 feet towards heaven. That's 50 stories. And it's 80 feet higher than St. Peter's. This church has room for 18,000 worshipers. And just for comparison's sake, that's almost exactly what the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville can accommodate for a hockey game. When construction of the church was completed, Pope John Paul II himself was there for its consecration. Now, I first learned about Our Lady of Peace several years ago in an article which highlighted how empty it was. If you build it, they will come, apparently didn't apply to Our Lady of Peace. And despite the capacity to seat 18,000 people on a Sunday, On any given Sunday, there might only be a couple of dozen worshipers. As one local admitted in this article, he said, "To be honest, we felt a bit sorry for the priest." The priest, however, who served the church since 1993, he responded, "Well, let's just say we had a lot of time for prayers." However, more recently, just 3 years ago, I stumbled across another article. And this one was in the Wall Street Journal, and it told how things had changed at Our Lady of Peace. The civil conflicts which had plagued the region had mostly ended. The economy was rebounding, and slowly, the word of this gigantic jungle basilica was spreading. And people were starting to come there. The trickle of tourists and pilgrims steadily increased. And people were coming from neighboring countries, as well as India and China and France and other places. They came to visit this church. And in 2017, it is estimated that 320,000 people visited the church. And attendance at worship had increased to the point where the priest was now forced to use a PA system to conduct Mass. I was reminded about Our Lady of Peace this week as I pondered our scripture reading for today, this parable of a wedding banquet. And the wedding banquet asks the question, what if you threw a party and no one came? Our Lady of Peace asks the question, what if you build a church and no one visited? In this parable, which we read in Matthew's Gospel, Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. And that's the situation for the parable. A king's son is getting married, and the king is hosting the reception. Invitations to this wedding, they've been sent out. And then on the day of the wedding, the king deploys his servants, his slaves, to inform those on the invitation list that it's time to attend. The party was about to commence. But for some reason, these people who had been invited, they chose not to come. When the king hears of this, he regroups. And he sends out another wave of servants. And these servants are instructed to urge the people to attend. They are told to describe in detail the menu, the festivities. And they are to assure the people that everything is ready now. Through his servants, the king is practically begging people to attend the wedding. But this time, the reception is a little different. This time, the invitees mock the king. Some ignore them and just go about their daily business. And others, and this is where this parable goes completely off the rails. Others seize the slaves, mistreat them, and kill them. They literally shoot the messenger. The king now, understandably, is enraged. He responds by sending his troops out to kill those who killed his servants. And then, for good measure, he has the troops burn their city. And this makes no sense at all because their city is also his city. He's burning his own city. And then the king instructs his servants to go out across the kingdom, scour the kingdom, and invite to the wedding anybody they can find. And the servants comply and they invite everyone, both good and bad, until the wedding hall is full. And then, at the appropriate time, the king makes his entrance into the party. But he's dismayed to see that one of the guests, well, it isn't properly attired. This guest who has brought it off the street is not wearing the traditional wedding robe that one would put on for such an occasion. And the king goes up to the man and he says, "Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe?" And the man, he's got no answer to that. And the king then turns to his attendants who are there with him, and he commands them to tie the man up and to throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then Jesus concludes this parable with these words, "For many are called, but few are chosen." I really can't emphasize enough how bizarre this parable is. It is definitely not one that we would teach at Vacation Bible School. The parable, well, it starts out well enough, but then do you see how quickly it devolves into murder and violence? And it leaves the listeners scratching their heads, wondering what's going on. Now, the common interpretation of this parable through the ages is to say that it describes how some who are called to the kingdom, well, they will reject God's invitation. Those are the people who would not come to the party. And for all those who do accept God's invitation, well, there is still a minimum set of expectations. And we see that in the man who's thrown out because he's not wearing the right clothing. God invites us to the kingdom, but we must be prepared. We read this parable, and we are certainly curious why the people refused to attend the wedding in the first place. I mean, after all, they should have been delighted to have been invited. This was, without a doubt, the social event of the season. Only the best would be there. This was the king's son's party. And if you were lucky enough to be on the invitation list, you would probably skip your grandmother's funeral to be there. But they didn't. They turned down the invitation. And I believe they turned down the invitation because they knew exactly what kind of man this king was. That he was petty and vindictive, violent and egocentric. And given the choice, they did not wish to be around him. They did not trust that the wedding itself would be safe. As I studied this parable this week, I realized that what we find here in this parable is the exact opposite of what we hope the kingdom is like. The world of this parable, it's a world of violence and death. It's ruled by this petulant king. It is the antithesis of everything that I hope God's kingdom is going to be like. And the clue to the purpose of the parable is found in Jesus' introduction, where he says, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to." Jesus doesn't say the kingdom of heaven is like a king hosting a wedding banquet, but instead the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king hosting a wedding banquet. Now, throughout the Gospels, Jesus tells us what the kingdom of heaven is like. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. The kingdom of heaven is like a net thrown into the sea. But through this parable of the wedding banquet, Jesus doesn't say the kingdom of heaven is like. He says, here is something you can compare to the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus challenges us to examine this world within the parable. And it's a world not unlike our own. And he challenges us to ask, can this world, can it be compared to the kingdom of heaven? I mean, this world in the parable is a place of violence and mayhem. and it's ruled by this capricious, easily offended monarch. Is the kingdom of heaven to be compared like that? No. No, of course not. So what is the kingdom of heaven like if it's not like this story of the wedding banquet? Well, I think that one excellent description of the kingdom, well, it can be found in the words of Psalm 23, which we read at the beginning of our worship today. Does this sound more like God's kingdom to you? The Lord is like a shepherd who watches over me and cares for me. He offers me a safe pasture where I can rest. He shows me quiet pools of water to drink from. The Lord restores my soul and shows me the way to righteousness. And when I find myself in the presence of death, I don't fear evil because God comforts me. Even with my enemies close by, the Lord prepares a meal for me where I will be safe. God chooses me. God makes me His own. I am filled with blessings. Goodness and mercy shall chase after me always, and I will call the kingdom my home forever. That's God's kingdom. That's a place of peace and of sanctuary. At God's banquet, there's no violence. There's no killing. The guests are safe, and they don't need fear being evicted just because they're not wearing the right clothes. We all know the movie, the Disney movie, Beauty and the Beast. In that movie, if you recall, a young woman named Belle is trapped in the cursed castle of the Beast. The servants of the castle, they're eager to make Belle feel welcome. So they prepare a sumptuous meal for her. And as they serve this meal, they sing that wonderful song, "Be Our Guest." In the middle of the song, you can hear a line which so beautifully reflects Psalm 23. The song says this: "You're alone and you're scared, but the banquet's all prepared." That's the welcome that's offered in the movie. It's the same assurance given in the psalm. It is the promise of God's kingdom. Even in the face of our enemies, a sanctuary banquet is set for us. Do you remember that church in Africa? That gargantuan church that few attended? Well, I believe that that church can also help us as Christians better understand this odd parable about a wedding banquet. That church, when it was built, remained mostly empty, largely unused. But the solution then, well, it could have been to just tear it down or walk away and abandon it. Because it clearly wasn't working, was it? But that didn't happen. That's not what the people did. And surprisingly, in time, well, things changed. The situation changed. People started attending. They started gathering at the church more and more. Now, it's still the same church, but it's moved from one end of a spectrum towards another. It's moved from empty to being full, from not serving its purpose to better serving its intended purpose. And I believe the kingdom of heaven is like that church, because the kingdom of heaven is not an either or. The kingdom of heaven for us is a location on a spectrum. Jesus' parable, it presents us with this portrait of a kingdom that is grotesque, that is full of evil and violence. And our inclination would be, well, to destroy that kingdom or at least walk away from it. That is not a place where we want to be. That's not a place we should be. But in reality, that kingdom is our world. And if we were to destroy it or leave it, we would have no place to live. We would be like that man at the banquet who's thrown into the outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. I believe that as Christians, our calling is not to abandon that world, but instead to transform it, to change it from a kingdom of violence to a kingdom of peace, to change it from a place of death to a place of life, to ignore the randomness of an arbitrary monarch and embrace the reassurance of a God who commits to covenant with us. As Christians, our invitation is to mold God's realm of heaven here among us, to make our world a place where we can say reassuringly to those who enter into it, "You're alone. And you're scared. But the banquet's all prepared. Be our guest." Amen.